Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with the current frontrunner to be the next senator from California, Adam Schiff, the Democratic congressman from Burbank. He leads in all of the recent polls. He leads in fundraising. It seems like he's going to be in the top two after March. It's unclear whether he would be facing off against Steve Garvey or Katie Porter or maybe Barbara Lee. There, this week, the four of them had a debate that we hosted at USC, and we came to our studio at the end of that week to talk about the one-year anniversary of launching his campaign, talk about the debate, talk about issues like housing affordability, and we had some fun as well. So here is the full conversation with Adam Schiff.
Congressman Adam Schiff, welcome back to The Issue Is, and I guess happy anniversary.
Thank you. I'm delighted to spend my anniversary with you.
Yeah, exactly. Your wife is here on the side, so
yes.
There's that anniversary,
yeah, but that's next month.
Yeah. So what does that, though, mean to you? What has been the biggest sort of thing you've learned actually doing this? Because you've talked about doing this for so many years, but actually doing it.
You know, I think the biggest takeaway has really been from my time spent in the Central Valley and in the Imperial Valley. When you run statewide and you spend time in parts of the state you haven't spent as much time in the past, it exposes you to a whole range of other challenges. In the Central Valley, there are thousands and thousands of people who can't drink the water. You know, you expect to be briefed about the competition between the cities and the farms for water. You don't expect to see such prevalence of people who can't drink the water out of their faucet. The extent of asthma among young people in the Central Valley because of the air quality problems, the rural hospitals that are shutting down, the lack of broadband access, a lot of problems you associate with other parts of the country. And when it's hammered home that actually if the Central Valley were its own state, it'd be the poorest state in the union, it's pretty striking.
What's been the biggest surprise of this year?
I think the degree, to be candid, of support that I've been able to earn from my colleagues in Congress. When I started out, I thought most of the California delegation would not get involved. When three people are running from the same delegation, the members usually stay out. But we now have about 70% of the members have endorsed my campaign. They made a decision. The problems in California are too great. The need for things like affordable housing and affordable child care, the need to deal with the lack of insurance with companies moving out of state, that they need someone they can work with in the Senate to get things done. And our campaign is really all about delivering results, not just rhetoric.
Probably the most high-profile moment of this entire campaign so far happened this week. The debate broadcast all over the state, getting coverage all over the world. What was your big takeaway from debate night?
My big takeaway was the moderator was excellent.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't you say
that's correct?
I think that's, of course, talking about Melanie, by the way,
Melanie Mason, your co-host. Of Politico, yes.
You know, I was surprised. I was surprised by a couple of things. I was surprised that Garvey was so ill prepared, but more than that, I was surprised that he made it so personal in our interaction. I challenged him on the lack of a housing policy, the lack of really any specifics. And he got very personal in a way I wasn't expecting. And my sense was he didn't want to say that he's going to be for Donald Trump. He voted for him twice. He didn't want to say he's going to vote for him again, but he's going to vote for him again. But in order to make sure that he scored points with the MAGA base of Donald Trump, attacking Adam Schiff is the next best thing to pledging your fealty to Donald Trump.
Well, and you attacking him also helps him with the MAGA base as well. But what he said was that you lied to 300 million Americans by basically inflating the case when it comes to collusion and Donald Trump. And he doubled down on that this week on Fox Business. Here's some of that.
He lied to the people. He was censored. And we, the people, 300 million people know that.
So what is your response to that, that essentially you made this case bigger than it was in order to score political points yourself, and you shouldn't be trusted because of it?
This is Donald Trump's argument. This is the no collusion, no obstruction mantra of Trump. The facts, though, are very different. As I laid out during the debate, Donald Trump's campaign chairman was secretly meeting with Russian intelligence and giving them their internal polling data while Russian intelligence was helping their campaign. Everybody other than Donald Trump recognizes, okay, that's certainly collusion. Can you imagine, Alex, if Hillary Clinton's campaign manager was meeting with Russian intelligence and giving them information so they could help her campaign? They would be screaming collusion from the rafters. So Garvey there is being dishonest, but look, he's carrying the water for Donald Trump. The censure was a partisan censure, and Donald Trump made sure it would pass by threatening anyone who voted against it with being a primary, suffering a primary challenge.
So right now, the polls show a real fight for second between Steve Garvey and Katie Porter. I know you look at this stuff really closely. I know you've got a lot of highly paid, really smart people that are working for you that are looking at this really closely. What do you think is the most likely outcome right now? You facing Steve Garvey or you facing Katie Porter?
The short answer is I don't know. I think the race between the two of them is pretty close. And it depends a lot on the assumptions you make about turnout. Who's going to turn out in a presidential primary in which there isn't really a contest for the Democratic nomination? There's a decreasing contest for the Republican nomination. But look, I'm just honestly focused on running the best campaign I can. I do think people need to know that there are differences between the candidates, that I have a record of taking on the big fights and defending our democracy and getting things done that others don't have.
One of the biggest differences on the Democratic side between you and Katie Porter is over this issue of earmarks, which is essentially a way that members request funding for their own districts. She says it's a corrupt system. She doesn't partake in it. You have partaken in it, as do most members. Lou Correa, the Democrat from Santa Ana, who's just next door to Katie Porter, endorsed you this week and said that earmarks was a big reason for that. Can you talk to us more about that conversation and also what that means to you?
Well, and I'm very proud to have Lou's endorsement, and not only Lou's endorsement, but now the endorsement of every other Orange County representative of Congress other than Katie Porter has endorsed my campaign. It's not all about earmarks. I think, frankly, bringing back money to California is indicative of something broader, which is, is the senator going to fight to help Californians? We're a donor state. We send much more back to Washington than we get back as Californians. Any senator who says, I'm not going to do that, when every other senator in the country is saying basically, I'd rather that money go to New York. I'd rather go to Ted Cruz in Texas. I'd rather go anywhere but California. My constituents, they'd rather have housing and a roof over their head than a political talking point. Whether it's farmers in the Central Valley with the need for water infrastructure, I'm going to do what Dianne Feinstein did, which is bring back billions. I'm going to do what Alex Padilla is doing, which is bring back millions and billions. I'm going to make sure that I'm doing everything to meet the needs of Californians, not just a poll-driven talking point.
Let's talk about the issue of housing affordability, which in a lot of ways is kind of the biggest issue in the entire state. How do we make homes more affordable? How do we keep Californians living in California?
We need to make a lot more housing. We need to build a lot more housing. And you're absolutely right. It's, I think, the top crisis in the state. My top economic priority is bringing down the cost of housing. There are all too many people who can't live anywhere near where they work. All too many people who don't even have a roof over their head. To build housing, you've got to dramatically increase federal tax credits, the low-income housing tax credit. You've got to make a stronger direct investment in housing, and you've got to eliminate some of the roadblocks at the local level. We can't take 4 years to build housing. We'll never solve this problem if it takes 4 years to get through all the red tape to build housing. But we can do this, but it's going to require a lot of changes.
You've got ads running about Donald Trump and your ability to fight back against him if he were to win the presidency again. We know that he doesn't really love you and calls you pencil neck and all the rest of it. If he becomes president and if you're the senator, how do you work together? And are there any issues where you could actually work together?
First of all, if he becomes president, I think we're in deep trouble. This is someone who says he's going to be a dictator on day one. But more than that, what I've demonstrated throughout my time in Congress is even in the most difficult times, there's still ways to work together. On the Intelligence Committee, where Devin Nunes and I fought cats and dogs over Russia and Ukraine and presidential abuse of power, every year we still got our intelligence authorization bills done. We did every year the work of the Intelligence Committee because we had to decide, okay, we're not going to let these other differences get in the way of getting things done. I worked with Republican Dave Dreyer on mass transit. I worked with Republican John Culberson on funding NASA and our space exploration. I have a long record of working across the aisle to get things done, and I'll continue to do that.
Is there any particular issue you think you might be able to do with him?
I remember one of the meetings I had with Donald Trump when he was president. I brought up infrastructure. He was always talking about infrastructure week, and yet we got no infrastructure while he was president. And I was saying, we need to work together on that. And I also brought up with him the need to bring down prescription drug prices, something he said he was for. And so there were two issues I brought up with him that I thought were good ground to get to yes on something in a bipartisan way.
Does he, like, call you pencil neck in person?
Actually, no. he was, you know, very cordial in person. And but look, it's part of his, you know, part of his shtick to go after anyone who stands up to him. And one thing you can tell about Donald Trump, he ignores the people that don't concern him. He goes after people that he thinks are effective. In fact, the first thing he said to me when I walked in the Oval Office was, you know, you do a really good job, which I'm sure what he meant was on television, because that's what he cares about.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, it was kind of an awkward silence, because when someone tells you do a really good job, the human instinct is to say, well, so do you. But I could not bring myself to say that.
One of the big fights right now is over the border. There's a fight in the Senate among Republicans, some of whom want to do a deal with Democrats, some of whom do not. Donald Trump is saying don't do a deal with Democrats. If you're in the Senate, how do you get a deal done? How do you negotiate with those folks?
Well, first of all, you have to have a partner on the other side of the aisle that actually wants to get something done. Right now, as you point out, Donald Trump is telling Republicans, don't work with Democrats to solve this problem. If you don't have a partner on the other side of the aisle, then you darn well need to make sure that when you control both sides, House and Senate, that you get the job done yourself. And frankly, when Democrats have been in charge of both houses, we haven't gotten the job done, and that's on us.
So what would you like to see be done at the border, assuming that you believe that there is a real crisis there?
There is a crisis at the border. You know, there are lots of people coming, fleeing violence, seeking a better life. And the best thing we could do, I think, is make it possible and safe for people to apply for asylum in their home countries. Now, that's not always possible, but it's infinitely preferable to people making that dangerous journey to the country and then having to wait years and years for their claim to be processed, their petition. We do need for those who do come to the country to be able to move much more quickly in assessing these asylum petitions. Are they valid? Are they not? It's not good for people to wait in limbo for years, and it's not good for the country. We need more resources for communities that are impacted. But I'll tell you what we don't need any more of. We don't need any more of treating these folks as political pawns, putting them on buses and planes, making a spectacle out of their desperation. They deserve our dignity and they deserve our respect.
But at the same time, why should Texas bear the brunt of all this? I mean, you got a country with 50 states, right?
Well, and if we can get people to apply for asylum in their home countries, that alleviates a lot of the pressure on Texas and on Arizona and other border states. But we're also, as you say, going to have to surge resources to these communities that are really impacted, because that should be a shared responsibility.
I want to end with something fun. You know, we play personal issues on this show. And I'm curious, when you were doing debate prep, were you prepping for personal issues questions coming at the end of the debate?
You know, I don't know if we were prepping,
okay.
but I have to give credit, if I can, to Eric Swalwell, one of my debate partners, who did an amazing Steve Garvey.
Okay. That's interesting to think. Well, I really wanted to do personal issues at the debate, but we ran out of time, and it was, like, devastating for me. So I'm now going to ask you the personal issues questions that I wanted to ask on the debate stage. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, here we go. What is the last TV show you binged?
Oh, I think it was Old Man with Jeff Bridges.
Oh, your guy. Best karaoke song for you?
Oh, gosh. I Did It My Way.
Nice to think of that. Who would you want to play you in a biopic?
Oh, you know, I have to tell you, I did an event with Robert De Niro, and he asked me who I wanted to play me in the movie.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, who do you want to play in the movie? He says, I could do Adam Schiff. And then he paused for a long time, Alex, and he says, yeah, I could definitely do Adam Schiff. And I realized you can't ask a serious question, a serious actor that question without them really thinking it over.
So there you go.
So I know who I want to play me.
Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro.
There we go. Maybe you can sing My Way as part of the movie. All right. Our thanks to Adam Schiff. A reminder, this week we also put out in podcast form the full debate, if you want to listen to it, and a conversation with Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, if you want to listen to that.
lots of really good content this week from The Issue Is, one of the biggest weeks we've ever had. Thanks to everybody for all their help in making it possible. Thanks to you for listening as well. Like us, subscribe, tell people about our podcast. We'd appreciate it. And drop me a line in social media. Let me know that you're listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much.